Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
One way to kind of look at art is, you know, obviously the execution, how was it painted? What's it painted of? But also concept. If I were to look at Ray Troll's work, it's very concept, like kind of based on puns, which is hilarious and just brings his sense of humor to canvas. Mine is not pun based. So mine is much more like kind of whimsical, fantastical, like what would I want to see right here? What would just totally blow my mind?
That was Derek DeYoung shedding a little light on some of the great fly fishing artists out there, including Ray Troll. Today we find out what really makes a great fly fishing artist tick. This is the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Wet Fly Swing Show. If you get a quick chance, head over to wetflyswing.com/members and join the members group. This is a good chance to go a little deeper and share some stories with some of the folks in the community. Derek DeYoung, the man behind some of the most unique fly fishing art, tells his story today. We find out how he got one of his first breaks with Sims, and we find out how his passion for art got started long, long time ago. Derek tells a pretty good story about his stepdad coming in and straightening him out as he was getting his business going. This is a good one. We dug into some good tangents on this one as well, so you can see, get a little insight into what made Derek, what separated him from the rest of the pack. And we also talk a little bit, another shout out to Anglers Coffee, wetflyswing.com/anglers. They have a new series going on where Derek DeYoung is actually printing some art on their bags. So you can check that out right now if you head over to Anglers Coffee. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsor. Togens Fly Shop, providing superior products at an affordable price. An amazing resource for fly tying materials, tools, and fishing accessories. Since 2005, Togens has been over-delivering on price, service, and passion, and now it's time to discover the Togens buzz for yourself. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Togens to get started today. You support this podcast by clicking over to take a look at Togens online. That's wetflyswing.com/Togens, T-O-G-E-N-S. Togens! So, without further ado, here is Derek DeYoung. How's it going, Derek?
Hey, what's up, Dave? I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on the show here. We're going to dig into a little bit of some art and fly fishing art and some of the good stuff you've been doing. You've worked with a bunch of great companies out there in the past. But maybe before we get there, I know you've done a little bit of fly fishing. Maybe you can talk about how you first got into fly fishing.
That's a good question. I started off when I was a kid just pan fishing. And, you know, just seeing fly fishing on TV shows, I was really interested, but no one really in my family did it other than just in front of the house catching bluegills. And eventually I talked my dad into bringing me to the Pere Marquette River here in Michigan. And we fly fished. I think we went and bought, you know, six flies. We each had three in our pocket, and we had those same rods that we, catch bluegills on, but we eventually did catch one trout. And I mean, we were so excited about it. But it wasn't till my college days that I really kind of dove into it head first. And, I would fish in Grand Rapids. There's a dam called the Sixth Street Dam, super famous place to go steelhead fishing. And I would just sit on the shoreline and watch everybody fish. But it was these guys with all these teched out backpacks and pouches full of gear and their fly rods and all different rigs. And I was so intrigued with, they just looked like the coolest guys, and they looked like they knew what they were doing, and they were catching more fish than any of the guys with bait. And one day I went down there, and my cousin, who had really gotten into fly fishing at the time, Ryan, said, "Hey, I got my spare rod in the car. Go back and get that, and I'll show you kind of the ropes here." So I did, and sure enough, caught a beautiful steelhead like within 20 minutes, and that was it. I mean, I was absolutely sold on it. From that point on, that's all I, for probably the next, 10 years, all I would do is fly fish. Now I do a little of everything, but I was pretty obsessed, and no, it was just a blast.
And so Michigan, and are you still in Michigan now?
I'm back in Michigan. We moved back here from Livingston, Montana. We're now in the Traverse City area, and it's great to be back to Michigan. I definitely miss Montana, but we head out there and hang out for a month during the fall, and that's a lot of fun too. So.
Yeah, so you're back in Steelhead country, right? Are you still, is that, was that something you missed when you were gone in Montana for a while?
A little bit, but there's so many different like fisheries out west that really kind of mimic the steelhead, just like lake run rainbows. They're certainly not as big, but you can use a lot of the same methods, and so definitely could itch that scratch while we were out there.
No, I always joked. I kind of always felt like I'm out, west, and steelhead's big. But for the longest time, I was like, "Oh man, could I leave steelhead?" But it's amazing because there's so many species, to catch all around the world now. I mean, I feel like I could probably live anywhere and be good with it. Is that, do you feel like that a little bit, or do you have a? I mean, you must have some special connection, like family in Michigan.
Yeah, well, with the fishing part of that, I just, I think I could survive anywhere if there was like a good fishery for something, because
Yep.
I'm not that particular. Yesterday, we were out and we were trying to find smallmouth bass in an area I'd never been, and there was a good brown drake hatch happening in that bay, and this is a Lake Michigan kind of fishery, and it got slicked out. It was kind of just barely sprinkling, really kind of almost foggy, hazy. And I look and I see all these noses out in the bay. Fish were rising. Went out there, it was mostly schools of carp, but there were also smallmouth taking, there were both spinners and there were actual a hatch going on. And I didn't really have any dry flies. Yet, but I just put a little tiny leech on and we started stalking these carp, which, gin clear water and dead calm, not real easy conditions. And, but I got a couple pretty good shots on them that came close.
Nice. Nice. That's
But I just tell that story because, whatever comes up, it's just so much fun dissecting the situation and trying to apply your knowledge to it and figure it out.
Yeah, totally. Totally. No, that is the good way to look at it. I just had Mike Schultz was on recently. He's a big, I think, guy not far from you. And we talked all smallmouth bass for like an hour plus. And yeah, tons of good tips. I'll put a link to that one in the show notes as well. But yeah, I want to dig in a little bit more just on your background. The art is really, kind of a unique thing you have going. I mean, it seems like you're kind of, what you're doing is leading out there a little bit on your style. And we had a recently Angler's Coffee. I was talking to Joe, and he kind of gave a shout out to you, and I circled around and tracked you down. And I want to get into a little bit of that maybe later on as we have time, but maybe just talk about a little bit on your art. I mean, how do you go from, has this been a lifelong thing on the art, and has the fishing art always been there along with just the regular art?
Funny thing is it's always been fishing art.
Oh, right. It's always been fishing. That's it.
When I was a kid, I mean, I didn't really think there was a job out there being a fish artist. But that's you know, most artists are good in the same way that a fly fisherman is because of their obsessive personality. You know, the obsessed people tend to figure it out. And I was obsessed with, you know, drawing and painting fish. And it was fifth grade that I entered a statewide Michigan youth wildlife art competition or show. And I absolutely thought I was going to win the thing, no problem, because I'd been doing fish drawings for, you know, many years, and didn't even get honorable mention. And I think there were 25 of those. And that was, you know, I think we all have memories of a very early turning point in our lives. And that was mine. It was the little butt kicking that I needed to realize I needed to keep working and improving, even at that young age. And it kind of sparked my dad too, because he really thought that I was going to win too. He thought my drawings were really great. And so how did I not win this? And so he enrolled me, my mom and dad enrolled me in private art lessons every week with a local artist. And that was just so integral to my development later on, because I had all the basics down, you know. So the next year I entered the same art competition. I ended up taking second place, but using the new skills that I had learned in these art classes. And, I was on my way. I mean, I was just absolutely, obsessed with becoming the best I could be at doing fish art. And then it was, you know, high school, continued doing it. And then in art school, college, I was kind of known as the fish guy, because every project I did, you know, the instructor never mentioned, go ahead and elaborate and add fish to it. But I would, I would make every project about fish. So, everyone got a good laugh out of it. But to me, that's what made it fun and kind of captured my imagination. And I loved, you know, drawing fish in different environments and perspectives and just challenging myself in that way. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. So why not continue? Trust me, along the way, there's been a ton of people who have, well, I think most people doubted whether it was going to really blossom into a career, but most people were like, Derek, you know, you're a very good artist. You could do other things. And I'm like, I know, that's not what I want to do. I want to do this. There's a million other talented artists out there doing different things or trying to do the subject that makes sense or that might make them money. I don't want to do that. That's not why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I love it.
Yeah. Why do you know, like the fish? I mean, I know why, because obviously it's the fishing, but for you, why do you love the fish art? Why have you always loved the fish art, actually drawing fish art so much?
You know, probably a lot of your listeners have thrown a mask on and done some snorkeling, and, you know, you get into that underwater environment and start seeing this totally different world than what you see in your daily life. And it's happening, and there's all kinds of little creatures and the colors of the sun coming through different water and through seaweed, the way it refracts on everything. I mean, that world is just the world that I want to, you know, express in my art. It inspires me. It's just naturally where I'm drawn to.
What's the, you know, the obsession really hits home to me, because I've been, you know, I'm working on right now some ADHD, you know, talking about maybe, you know, doing something to address, not even address, because I think there's a lot of people that's actually probably a good thing. But I mean, what is the obsession to you? What does that look like over your life when you're 15? And have you had the same work ethic that whole time, or what does obsession mean?
Well, you know, I definitely had whatever it was, AD or whatever, I don't know what you call it. And they tried to get me on Ritalin. I was on it, and it definitely tamed me a bit. But I just kind of decided, after about a year of using Ritalin that I'm like, you know what? Like, I am who I am. Like, yes, it is hard to be in school when you're ADHD or whatever, but you know, I think the energy and the obsession, and you can concentrate very well on the things you want to concentrate on. That's like the little niche in that. It's just, you have a really hard time concentrating on stuff that doesn't make sense to you or you don't want to listen to it. That's why school is so difficult for kids. So I got back off it, and you just have to learn to, like, kind of, you know, work within that. And I'm able to get everything done that I need to. So, you know, and that has taken years of work and effort to kind of work with that mentality. And, but I'm a pretty heavy right-brained guy, and I don't want to take any drugs that are going to, you know, tame that. I'd rather use that to, you know, my largest advantage.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I think that I have heard stories of people, adults even, you know, taking some of that stuff and it helping them be more productive in their work or whatever. But yeah, I've always felt the same way. I remember when I was, I've told this maybe before, but I quit tobacco a long time ago. And, you know, it was one of those things. Part of it was because I was getting heartburn at the time. And my doc said, hey, you can take this heartburn medication. It'll take care of it. And I was like, man, I don't want to take medication. There's got to be some life stuff that I could quit, you know, that'll get rid of that. But, you know, for you, I mean, ADHD is obviously different, and that's a totally different story. And I don't want to focus completely on that here. But I just wanted to touch on, you know, just to get a feel for how you've gotten to where you are. And it sounds like you've done it, you know, most of your life. So that gives you a head start. But what was it like when you first, you know, I'm not sure what the first big fly fishing or fishing project was. Can you bring us to that moment and what that felt like?
Well, I'll tell you about when I got out of art school. You know, you get done with art school and then you kind of scratch your head and go, I forgot to ask them like what I should do when I get out.
They didn't teach you the business side of it?
No, like, holy cow, I've got to like come up with something and actually put a plan together. So what I did was my dad and I built a kind of 10 by 10, really terrible wood lattice, like, situation that could break down. I bought like a cheap trailer. We'd cover this lattice thing with like black material. It was the worst. Took forever to set up and forever to break down. And I started doing summertime fine art shows outdoor. And man, those are so much work. If you ever go to an outdoor art show and you see an amazing display out there, you got to understand probably that artist and a family member or their spouse carried all that stuff like five blocks or more in the blazing sun and carefully set it all up. I have so much respect for those artists that spend, you know, their summers doing that or down south all year long. But it was a blast. I met so many cool people, kindred spirits, other artists, and was fun showing my art to people. My art was at the time very different from other kind of sporting art, fish art. And it was a really fresh kind of young vibe to it, a little more contemporary. Some of the stuff borderlined on not abstract, but just abstract based upon that it had no kind of outer shape. So just taking fish patterns and parts of their anatomy and their bright colors and using those as like kind of fuel for an abstract painting. And that really, you know, hadn't been done. And a lot of people hated it. I'm not going to lie. It was like a total turnoff to a lot of people. But the thing that kept me doing it was I was getting people that were just in love with it, like people who would stay in my booth all day, just so happy to see something they'd never seen before and to, you know, talk with me about it. I knew I was on to something. I wasn't necessarily convinced I was doing it completely right or doing it justice, but I knew my idea was good. And And I was winning first place at a lot of these juried art competitions. I was coming home with a blue ribbon and no cash. at one point, my father-in-law, who's a financial guy, sat down with just a legal pad and said, "Derek, what do you sell at these shows? What are the products?" And he kind of goes through and he, "Okay, how much? What's your average? How many paintings are you selling? Okay, and how many prints? And you got little packs of note cards. All right, so we're looking at how many shows are you gonna do?" And he does the math. "Okay, like at this current level, if you do that many shows, you're going to make like $9,000. Yep. I mean, the cold, you know, reality of the situation sets in at that point. That's not how an artist's mind works, by the way. We don't think that way. Payment for me is someone loving my art. And, you know, eventually I did learn how to, kind of think that way a little more. But I was happy that he did that because it really set a fire under my butt to change things and to start seeking new ways to sell my art. And, you know, that was when I really started thinking I need to move out west. Hmm. And so that was the next step.
Oh, really? So you felt like the most important thing was, or one of the more important things was to get to a different place where, and describe that as, I mean, I can't remember the town in Montana, but describe that versus where you were at.
I got out of art school during a recession. Michigan is a very auto industry based, you know, more so in the past, things have changed a lot. But still, if auto industry jobs are declining and being laid off, if they're not thriving, no one thrives. And that mindset that happens in that kind of economy, you think the whole world is doing the exact same thing. Well, no one's buying art because, you know, jobs are hard to come by. You don't really think outside of your little bubble until you get out. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, other places are thriving. Also, next to that thing that was happening in Michigan, especially at the time, fish art really wasn't in vogue. You know, guys loved it, but the wife would, you know, totally put the kibosh on putting it in the living room. Oh, we're not putting that fish painting in our living room. It was not part of the culture at the time. Out west, fly fishing and fish art is so ingrained in the culture that, you know, instead of trying to sell a painting that's going to go in the guy's like fishing den in the basement, I'm now trying to sell a painting for the most, you know, beautiful marquee spot in the entire home or in the business or wherever it's going to go. And that is just so much, you know, more gratifying and a lot better living to be made doing that.
That was interesting. You mentioned about your father-in-law giving you a little coaching on the business side of it. And that was, so was that, I mean, it sounds like you were married at the time, or because that's interesting, right? So it sounds like you, I guess, was that the case when your father-in-law gave you that coaching advice?
Yep. I was married, let's see, like 3 months after I graduated from school, from art school. And, I knew I had the right one, and I knew I wanted to pursue becoming a professional artist, and what that was going to entail, I didn't know, but I kind of felt like I needed to put a ring on her finger in order to justify dragging her through whatever was going to happen next.
That's awesome. Yeah. Janelle, right?
Yep. And that's Janelle.
Yeah. And Janelle's been awesome. She's been doing all the back end stuff, setting this up. So that's been really, really smooth and great with all that. But so that does make sense. And, you know, you had your father-in-law that came in there early, gave you a little coaching. And so, I mean, I know you've had some big collaborations. When you look at everything you've done, is there like some one big thing that sticks out that you're like, wow, that was a pretty amazing? Or do they all kind of stick out to you?
You know, probably the my first real licensing thing was with Sims, And that was like the year after I moved out west. And I'll give you a little insight into this. It's kind of a funny story. They kind of came to me and asked if I would, you know, work with them doing different products, blah, blah, blah. When it came down to it, they gave me a contract, and I can't remember what the number was, but essentially they got to use my art for free.
Oh, wow.
You know, they paid me, but very, very little. And, I just thought to my, and you know, it's always with artists, it's always, we hear nonstop, it's going to be the exposure, you know, the exposure right. is really a big value here. You're going to get some money, but the exposure,
that
you're
was
gonna,
their argument.
Well, that's everybody's argument yeah. when they try to, get, you know, cheap art from an artist.
Gotcha.
And, I didn't know what to do about it. I had a different opportunity that was with another company. It wouldn't have been as kind of upfront in the fly fishing industry, but it was a lot better money. And so I guess that emboldened me to be a little harder of a negotiator. So I reached out to one of my professors from Kendall College and asked, like, you know, how do I deal with this situation? And she sent me a link to this book. So I ordered the book and read through all the material. I mean, it's a huge book. It's like the handbook for visual artists. And they do a new edition every like 4 years. So all the numbers are pretty current. So I took a highlighter and I highlighted all the stuff laid out for essentially doing a licensing agreement like we were looking at doing. And I went into the next meeting and just set the book down, and they said, well, what's it going to take to make this happen? We know you didn't like that first offer. And I slid the book across. I'm like, I'm not looking to get rich, but this is what the current standard is, and this is what I want. And they were like, deal. So that was kind of cool because it was so early in my career, and it was so cool to be able to strike a fair deal with a big company. You know, I think I kind of set the standard at that time for what it was to work with artists in fly fishing. That negotiation kind of was what, you know, other artists called me and asked me what I did and what, you know, what was the industry standard and what to ask for. And then it just seems like with, you know, this the way it is right now, there's so many new artists that have come out and so much talent out there. But the unfortunate thing is that I don't think any of them are good negotiators, because the entire like industry as far as selling licenses has just kind of become so saturated, and all these younger artists are willing to do it for next to nothing. And so that's the new standard. And so that's kind of tough.
Oh, wow. Well, so that's it. So, and just going back quickly on that book, so was it called The Handbook for Visual Artists?
I believe it is, yeah.
Okay, I'll put a link to that. I mean, this is really interesting. I'm glad you started this, because it's, you know, for a lot of these companies, I've interviewed a lot of smaller companies as well that are in this space. And yeah, it's challenging. I mean, you got Sims and some of these big companies. And I mean, what you're talking about here is your valuation, right? I mean, what is your service or your products? What are they worth?
Here's what it comes down to as an artist. You know, we are usually out there and pretty right brained, and that's what makes us so intuitive and sensitive and able to come up with good art. But that's also what makes us suckers in the business world. And, you know, it is such a stereotype that, you know, big business can pretty much get art from artists for next to nothing. And that makes it impossible for artists to make a living. So it's so important that you learn to run your business, figure out what the industry standard is, and stick to that, even if you lose the job, because you're just ruining what the industry. Now the industry standard is different. It's not what that book says. It is, because all these people will do it for free, that is the new standard. So you do have to protect it if you want to be able to make a living from that, you know, that type of work.
And that was, so that Sims moment, that was the moment where you realized, you were like, okay, this is, I mean, was that the moment you realized this is going to be, had you known before that for sure you could do this as a career full time, no problem?
Well,
or maybe no problem is a little too.
Yeah. Like that sounds a little cocksure to me. I wasn't quite there. But I was, it was about then that I was, you know, catching on. I was doing tons of shows. And once I signed on with Sims, which that was a really great company to break in my career and into the fly fishing world. So that was a fantastic thing. And probably, you know, early on, especially the most exciting license that I did. I started doing all the little like fly fishing days across the West with the Sims rep. He was like, dude, you come with me. We'll caravan or whatever, camp, fish, and you do all the shows with me because I got to go show new product and you can use it as a platform to show your art. So I did. And, you know, it's a little different mentality than what's happening right now with like the immediate gratification of Instagram and TikTok and whatever you use. Everyone in the world can see what you're doing and you don't even have to do any real work. You know, I'm not trying to downplay that because I think there's some really good things about it, but you can't replace, you know, all the time and effort it takes to do, you know, 30 shows in a summer. I mean, that's a dedication that is far exceeding sitting in your studio and using your cell phone to make a little video or take a picture. And not only that, I got to meet people, you know, face to face and shake hands and actually make friends. And that was important to me. And so at that point, I was starting to be booked out, you know, past a year to complete a painting, a custom commission. So at that point, I felt pretty sure that as long as I kept getting better at this and working as, you know, as harder or getting smarter, that, yeah, this was going to be my career for the rest of, you know, my life.
There you go. How do you, I guess just quickly, I'm just curious, just generally, I mean, on a piece, I know there's probably lots of variation, but what does that take you to produce a original?
Dave, if you haven't heard it before, 41 years.
Oh, right. Is that's it.
And that's the only answer anyone can give you. Because it, you know, I've done things so many times and taken lessons from those things. So would you say that they are part of a current painting? You know, they really are. I had to do 100 paintings to get here.
Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior quality products at an affordable price, an amazing resource for fly tying materials, tools, and fly fishing accessories. Togan's has you covered when looking for unique in-house products, but also supports and supplies materials and tools from other leading fly brands you know and trust. Togan's is now offering their mystery fly tying box, where they simplify the process for you in choosing materials. You're only one click away from these hand-picked subscription tying boxes that are packed with value at almost half the cost. And I recently made a order through Togan's, and the experience was perfect. After a recent trip nymphing for trout, I had to replace my tungsten beads and some jig hooks and a few other items. The products arrived in a couple of days from Togan's with a nice little card, a bonus value, and a welcome note from the Togan's family. Since 2005, Togan's has been over-delivering on price and customer service, so it's time to discover for yourself what the buzz is all about. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Togan's and take a look at their diverse selection of products today. You can support this podcast by clicking over to take a look at Togan's online. That's wetflyswing.com/TOGENS. Togan's. You know, you talked about getting better. So, I mean, are you quicker now as far as, you know, if you had to draw that now, would you be quicker? And also, are you still getting better every time?
Well, that's a great question. And I hope so. And I really, really, my measure of success, in my career and for myself every day is that I get better. And I really think that, you know, as an artist, each of us are blessed with X amount of talent, but the intangible is how hard are you going to work to develop it? And it like that quality of your work only goes up just incrementally with tons of hard work. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't get rock hard abs from a week's worth of sit-ups. It happens over time and just lots of paintings and lots of experiences. But if you commit yourself lifelong to it and you truly, you know, the end goal is to just be a old gray bearded man that is just killing it and making the best paintings of his career. That is what I want. And that's what I'm trying to do. So I hold myself to that standard with every piece. And especially now in my career, you know, there's a lot of projects I just don't take on, because they're not going in a direction that would lead me to be, you know, growing as an artist or becoming better, pushing my portfolio. So,
yep, that's it. So you are always pushing it. Are you still as obsessed now as you were when you were 15?
More. You know, it's like anything, that once you start obsessing, all these new doors open, and then you start going in all those and all these new doors open. And it's, you know, the more you can do, the better you get at it, the more you can achieve, and you become more and more critical and discerning of how the painting is going to look, or, you know, the concept of it, or, the palette, and push it further and further and further. So every painting I've done before, the one I'm going to work on today, is a building block for what I'm going to do today and how far I can push it.
That's, I thought about that a little bit. You know, I've had a number of, you know, I guess artists, you know, writers, and lots of people. And I've heard the stories about how people work, you know, about how it's important to get up right at the same time, do the work, you know, do the work. Don't miss out. Can you just take us through a quick little, like a typical day in the life? Like, are you always, you know, in your week doing a similar thing, or how's that look?
Well, no, I'm extremely easily bored. As far as with the work, I will do something highly detailed and representational of the subject. Maybe I'll do something really creative in left field with like the palette, but it'll take a lot of different, you know, a lot of layers of polishing and work to bring the painting up to the finished thing. The very next painting I'm going to do, and this is just because I've done this for so long, I understand how my brain works, is going to be really loose and energetic and quicker to get from start to finish, but not necessarily not as good of a painting, just a totally different energy and style. And that like is so good for me. You know what I mean? In my creative brain, just allowing, you know, taking the harness off and just letting my brain do its thing. It's like the colors don't have to make sense. Sometimes painting really intuitively can just be so gratifying. If you're an artist and you're listening and you're trying to create these extremely representational paintings, just try taking the reins off and just paint by intuition. Let your brain tell you, oh, this color needs to go here, and this, you know, let's draw this over here, and, you know, get rid of all the things that make you feel like you have to be so accurate. And it can really, I think, just make you feel better. It's cathartic.
Well put. So it sounds like, and there's a little bit of variation in your day, but that kind of explains a little bit about how you get there. Do you see, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of people out there. I don't know if there's a lot of people doing similar things out there, but are there other artists you see now that are doing something similar, or are you considered like great artists?
Well, both. Yes. There are some amazing artists in my field, and just that I look at their work and I'm like, oh, I'm just like so psyched that they are going down this road and coming up with this work And it just it's awesome. And then there's a lot of really talented artists that, you know, maybe build their portfolio off of my ideas. And, you know, that's okay too. It bums me out a little bit when they take full credit for not only the painting and the execution of it, but also the concept of it. Cause it, you know, it took me a long time in my life to come up with this stuff. It wasn't overnight. So, sometimes I can get a little bit, disappointed in that, but you know, it is what it is. I think it happens in every industry with every product. If you, have a good fly fishing product, you're going to be the only one in the market to have it for only one season.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it is. That's right. I've heard that about jokingly, you know, and truthfully, just with products too. You know, you hear like line companies, right? You hear somebody joking about how, yeah, oh, yeah, you got about a year until somebody's going to have your same, in fact, even a similar naming structure. I always go back to the podcasting because that's kind of my art, you know, and I think about, you know, new people coming in and how I do it. And, you know, I found that I tend to try to not, I don't listen to a lot of other podcasts in our niche because I like to try to just do my own unique thing. Do you find that over time you kind of stuck with your own thing and didn't really look at what other people were doing?
Well, early on for sure. But as it's become so, easy to just drum up Instagram in the morning and I follow all these artists, I love seeing, you know, what other people are up to, what they're doing. It's a easy way for me to connect. I love messaging other artists and encouraging them because I know what that does and I know how important it is. Especially I'm a guy that you probably want to talk art with, you know, because I know what it takes to make it. And I really appreciate what they're doing.
I did want to talk about Angler's Coffee. They've, like I said, Joe has been somebody. Actually, we have a podcast with Joe where I dug in. They're a sponsor of the podcast, and it's just it's a really cool story. You know, I love Joe's story because talk about probably ADHD, a guy that, you know, made lots of money in a previous business and started a fly fishing or a coffee company focused on fishing because, you know, he just loved doing what
that's
he does.
What he loves.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that just shows you the guy has enough money that he doesn't have to worry about it, but that's him. And so I just love the story. And part of that was I said, Joe, you know, you got to connect me. I want to bring somebody on that you would like to hear, you know, and he mentioned you. And obviously your name's popping around everywhere, so you probably would have come on eventually anyways. But I just want to talk just so people understand what you guys are doing with Anglers because I don't want to miss – I haven't heard the story of what you have coming. Can you describe what you're doing for them?
We're doing some packaging with them, and it's featuring some of my fish faces, which is one of my longest standing painting series. I still love doing them. And they just look awesome, you know, on a bag like that, super colorful. And, you know, people who don't know what they're looking at, it'll take them a minute to figure out that it's a different trout.
That's good. That gives us a little bit of a taste. So the fish faces is, I mean, where could we find that if we wanted to go look at some of just your what you've done? I mean, could people actually right now buy a print?
On my website, derekdeyoung.com, we have, you know, you can hit the shop button and that's going to bring you to where you can actually buy prints in all of our available prints. We try to offer prints of every new painting. But there's a lot of older paintings that aren't available as, in our print section. So if you want to see those, they're not really archived by year, but, if you go into the gallery section and then pick, you know, what type of fish you want to look at, brown trout, saltwater, tarpon, permit, you'll be able to see kind of the full collection of most everything I've done, of that species. And that's how to find it.
So that's it. So basically, yeah, and I'm in the gallery now. So yeah, you've got, like, for example, for steelhead, you've got a bunch of different takes. So these are pieces that you've already, you know, from Pat, your whole life, really, some of this stuff. Is there a good,
early on, even some you know, from right after art school or the very end of art school. Yeah.
Yeah. Who was your, I'm just curious, because this gets me thinking, I think if there are some artists that are probably even older than you out there that, one I'm thinking of is like, you know, Ray Troll. Have you seen much of his work?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ray Troll. I mean, he was a kind of a bigger than life person. I remember I met him once and he was a very, very robust personality and stuff like that. But, you know, when you think of his art, his is pretty, I don't know if I'd say out, I guess out there, but are there other mentors? Was Ray or were there other people that kind of mentored you or have, was a lot of this started on your own?
You know, I wouldn't say I ever had a mentor, but I definitely, you know, looked to the people who are doing this before me to get an example of, you know, what's possible. And, you know, I was always interested in doing it my own way, you know? So there was never an issue with, you know, stepping on the toes of the people who were already doing it. But just as far as what business opportunity is there, you know, what kind of commercial value is there? Are they licensing? Are they making product, t-shirt sales, stickers? What, you know, how do you sell your art if you're not actually going to sell an original painting? And so I definitely had my eye out on what was happening at the time. But what's kind of amazing in our, you know, art industry, you know, is things have changed so much since I started, and it's been amazing to see. And printing technology has just gone crazy. When I first started, you had to order like, you know, 500 or 1,000 of a print in order to make it feasible to sell it at a price people would pay, and you had to like sell through that edition. Now the printing technology is just so much better, and you do digital G clay printing, and
is it like print on demand now
sort of now thing? You don't have to keep, you know, stock of every single thing. You can order as you know needed. That's huge. That's why I'm able to offer so many different paintings, not just, you know, not just two brown trout, two tarpon, you know, a brook trout, like, so.
There you go. So pretty much you can get anything, and I'm just kind of still searching through. You got, yeah, I mean, you've got art on anything, right? Could you pretty much get, if I wanted to get something, some clothing item, like a hoodie or whatever, could you buy that right now?
It's absolutely out there. But let me give you some idea of what Janelle does. I think she told me we had 257 SKUs right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And every day people get in touch with ideas for product, and it's like, they're good ideas. Well, some of them are. But it's just like, there's only so many things you can do. And we have a warehouse, and it's like, you know, we pay to have that product there. We have to pay to have shelf space. So it's like, the more you have, then, you know, it comes back to that lesson my father-in-law gave me. You got to start looking at the numbers.
So what are your SKUs? If you had to think of one SKU, because we're talking, you still, it sounds like you do original art for people and stuff, but maybe you don't know this, maybe Janelle again could answer this, but is there one SKU or one type of, you know, art print or whatever that you do that gets more, you know, more traction or more sales?
For sure. Phone cases are just, you know, one of those weird items that, you know, when I first started this business, I would have never understood that that would be a way that a lot of people want to, you know, display art and show their passion for fly fishing. And so we sell a lot of phone cases, and we kind of learned our lessons as we went. We started off with a cheaper company doing phone cases, and they were doing phone cases throughout like the fly fishing industry. So a lot of different companies were using them, and they would crack, and they would, you know, not go on the phone right. There was so many issues, and, you know, it becomes kind of not very much fun to make that product if that's the case. So since then, we've partnered with established phone case companies and stuck with that, even though it's more expensive and we make a lot less money. We offer the industry standard best phone cases with my art on them, and they're all warranted from that company. So that has made dealing with issues so much more streamlined and made a lot happier customers too, I think.
Yeah, I see these things. I think they're like right now $45 for a case. And I mean, I found the more I get into this that the premium products, that seems like the better place to go, because if you go, you can't win on price. I mean, so you might as well have something that's higher quality. And yeah, these are beautiful, man. You got the rainbow, you got the harvest moon, which is pretty cool. The harvest moon, this is good. You got the moon out there with a little, looks like a mayfly. And that one looks kind of similar. When I mentioned the Ray Troll, his stuff is, he's got stuff like this, the spawning run, right? He'll have like a salmon with legs and stuff like that, but maybe a little more out there. But the Harvest Moon kind of reminds me a little bit of maybe, his, that style of it's not quite, it's not
well, his
fish.
Like,
yeah.
One way to kind of look at art is, obviously the execution, how was it painted? What's it painted of? But also concept. And I think, if I were to look at Ray Troll's work, it's very concept, like kind of based on puns, which is hilarious and just brings his sense of humor to canvas. Mine is not pun based. So mine is much more like kind of whimsical, fantastical, like what would I want to see right here? What would just totally blow my mind? And I have seen a lot of these things. And really, you couldn't photograph or represent it in that way. But it's in my mind, and I'm able to draw it and turn it into a painting.
Yeah. And on the spotting, like, for example, I'm looking at one, the brown trout or whatever. It's so on that spotting pattern, when you're doing this, you're not necessarily taking like a photo you took and kind of, designing something off of that. This is more from memory, or how, because I'm looking at these spottings, right? The brown, this rusty spinner, it's amazing. How does that look? I'm just curious, what you get in your
Like throughout different little parts of my career, I've kind of set standards for what I was going to do. And there was a time when I tried to look at no reference at all. And like you say, just use the image in my head, and that like produced a very different painting. And I still think there's a lot of value to it. Cause it's very kind of put through the filter of the artist's brain, who cares if it doesn't look just like a photo. Like, there's plenty of photos that are wonderful out there. Like, I wanted to really bring the artistry side. Currently I don't follow a photo either, but I will look at references, and I'll pick out little intricate things that make that fish different, and the shape of his snout or the kipe or spot pattern that is really interesting, or just like unexpected. And I'll use that, little pieces of different things. If I ever paint like a brown trout, you're really seeing that I've looked at probably a half dozen pictures for that specific painting that I just put on my phone and glanced at different things. The fin color, I mean, let me ask you a question. What color is the pectoral fin of a brown trout?
Ooh, that's a great question. That's a great question.
Well, you could say a lot of colors and you'd be right. And it just depends where it came from. What, is it a lake run fish? Is it during the spawn? So, it's important to me to get those things right. If I'm doing a representation of a fish in spawning colors, I want to do, justice to what those fins should look like. What colors are they?
So do you get people occasionally that say, hey, I would like to have a steelhead from the Great Lakes sort of thing and all of that? Or do you kind of keep it more general for your new original art?
I haven't had someone say that, no. But they will send some pictures of a steelhead and say where they caught it, and if I could, like, kind of, you know, capture the coloration or the shape of that fish, and that, you know, that's pretty normal. But, you know, I would say, I mean, I paint steelhead. I definitely have painted quite a few steelhead. I paint a lot of different saltwater fish, but the bulk of what I paint would be tarpon, brown trout, brook trout, and then everything else starts to disperse from there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to, like, well, people often, you know, kind of message me or contact me and say, well, why aren't you doing more redfish? Well, here's the thing is I have caught plenty of redfish, but it's just not like, it's not like on that forefront of my passion to catch redfish. I love doing it. Trust me. If I was better at it and there were more of them around my house, I would do it more. And then I'd probably paint it more. But the longer I've been in this art game, the more I realize you've got to be you, and you've got to focus on the things that you're passionate about, and it will come through in the painting. People won't know why, but they'll know, they'll see the passion. And the things that I really like doing, in the fish that I really like fishing for, and that I know the most about, and that's not just, you know, fishing for them. I plant GoPros and get my own footage, and take a lot of my own references, and occasionally do use some references from other photographers, which is really helpful, and I'm thankful that they let me occasionally cherry pick some. But it, usually it's just like the position of a fish, or just the posture of a fish that I'll take from a photo, and then it goes, you know, then it goes totally from there in a different direction.
I'm looking at the hex hatch, and that one, I'm sure guy fishing in towards night, you know, there's the hatch coming off, and you got this fish coming up to slurp a bug. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. It comes from your passion. You do a lot of that. And then there's some other ones. Yeah, there's other ones in here that maybe look a little, I don't know if it's anatomically correct, but do you find yourself, you know, thinking about that in your head, like how close to that do you get versus more, I guess, is impressionistic the word for that when it doesn't look maybe as correct?
You know, I guess the question to ask myself as I'm painting is this adding to the painting, or is this making it a lesser quality painting? And I think as the years have gone on, I have gotten better at just drawing more anatomically correct fish, but I also still love kind of deviating from that and exaggerating some features a little bit. Not in a way that makes them just like crazy, but just, you know, I don't like doing like little stalkers. Okay. I like doing the big dominant buck with the big jaw and the, you know, really developed kite. And I mean, I don't, that's what I like. So that's what I paint. And, you know, you got to paint what speaks to you, I think.
That's good advice. No, it's great. Great to hear. So, I guess, Derek, we're going to take this out really quick here. I just have a few kind of random questions. This isn't necessarily right on with the art, but I'm curious because I was looking at your Instagram feed a little bit and I saw, I think, did you have like a Tacoma or some sort of a Toyota gray pickup with a big, like ready for like a overlanding adventure? Is that your truck?
Yep. That's the new adventure mobile we've put together.
There you go. So I'm curious about this because I just actually had, and I occasionally veer off a little bit. Sometimes I get flack for it. People want to hear more fly fishing focused, you know, stuff, but I love to veer off a little bit. I kind of feel like it's stretching our podcast a little bit. And I did a episode with a person I know, Brent, who has this Oregon AT, and he sells these campers. And we got into a lot of, it was more like, you know, what do you need on your trip if you're going into the woods to be safe. But we talked about those campers and it looks like you have one. Well, what is that, that camper on the back? Is there a company there that we could look at?
Yep. It's a four wheel camper and they're out of Southern California. I drove 18 hours one way to go get it. The only way I was able to get it was, someone canceled. And I think they have like five different, distributors around the, or sales, places around the U.S. And they all have the ability to jump in and take that canceled order because they're way out over a year to get one. And anyway, I called that Friday afternoon and left them a message and then called that Monday at like 8 a.m. when they opened. And the guy's like literally just walked in, didn't even have his first cup of coffee. And he's like, dude, like, you won't believe this, but there's a cancellation right here and you can have the spot. No one else has claimed it. So I got super lucky and was able to order it and trick it out the way I wanted. And at the same time, ordered a new Toyota Tundra. And, you know, this winter, that was kind of our project, was watching YouTube and figuring out what we wanted to do to the truck and to the camper. And also, we set up a 1 month loop out through Montana. And so that's just been, for Janelle and I, it's been kind of our hobby for this year, something different.
That's perfect. And on that camper, does it, is there a model of it so we can take a look at that? Is it more, it pops up, right? And then you have a sleeping area at the top.
Well, four wheel campers, they're coming out with some new stuff, but the commonality between all of them is they are pop-ups. On my half ton pickup, it's the Hawk model that I have. It drives beautifully. I've got the, you know, V8 engine, but it's not a 3/4 ton or a 1 ton pickup. And I think the thing that I didn't understand before I talked to people who had truck bed campers was how unpleasant it is to drive cross country with a big sail above your truck. And this does not feel that way. It cuts through the wind, and it was great. I just got back last night from Pictured Rocks up in Munising in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And that was kind of my first real camping trip out of it. We were way, way back in the wilderness at a KOA campground.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Well, I don't know that area, so I wasn't sure if I was going to build a, and plus I have a 23-foot long bay boat behind me. So how far down a trail do I want to pull that thing? The real goal here was to just try the camper and be in the boat all day out in Lake Superior. If you haven't seen the south shore of Lake Superior, it's just insane. And it was so much fun to be out there and checking everything out and exploring, you know, 300-foot cliffs, like just crazy sandstone like formations. And they call it Pictured Rocks because there's like all different minerals have kind of over the years like made stripes down the face of the walls.
Wow, that was cool. Yeah, I'll put a link out to that, and I'll make note.
Well, check out my Instagram.
Okay.
Derek.deyoung, and I've posted a few videos and some photos of that trip, and you can check out what that actually is.
Good, and that's kind of around the just for time, so people, if this in the future, this is around like June, May, June when you posted those.
It's right now.
Right now. Oh yeah, right now. Okay. Good. Well, yeah, no, I'm always interested. Like I said, I had this episode, I'm in the market too for something. And that's what Brent said. He said, well, you better have a year or whatever it was. And, and those things aren't cheap, but that's the thing is that you get a camper and then that's it, right? It's pretty much a canopy. There's not anything else in it other than a bed, right? That pops out.
Go on their website. They have all kinds of different things you can
add to it,
add to it. But mine has a king bed. It has a full bed. I mean, in the space of the camper, they've done some serious engineering, to make that work, but super comfortable, real easy to pop up. It does have, there's not much room in there. And there's just barely what you need, but nothing extra. I'm a big guy. And so, if I'm in there, no one else is, like if I'm cooking or organizing, it's like my buddy's not sitting in there with me. It's really just where we kind of base camp from. I can cook in there. It's got a heater. It's got, I think probably the thing I was most impressed with, it has two max fans, I think they're called. And you put one blowing in and one blowing out. And by the time we'd wake up in the morning, there was no condensation in there. It just felt fresh. You know, you weren't sweaty because there was so much fresh air constantly going through the camper. And that's just kind of a complaint most people have about campers, is that they're just kind of, you know, just kind of musty and not that fresh feeling in the morning. What else? We were in a torrential downpour. There were actually tornadoes in the lower part of the state one of the nights we were camping, but one of the back windows actually did leak. And so we're trying to figure out exactly what we need to do about that. But this torrential downpour was essentially like dunking the whole camper underwater. It was and the canopy was well worth its money because we had our camp chairs and some whiskeys and just sat there watching the wall of water come past us. You know, it was cool. It actually was fun.
All right. Well, and two quick ones. I'm not sure. Do you listen to any other podcasts? Is that something you do at all?
You know, I'm not really a podcast guy. No.
Okay. But. Good. Well, that scratches that one off. That's good. The other one I want to check with you on music. What about music? Do you have a band or a type of music or something you listen to?
Good question. And that is yes, I am super into music. And if you're around me, there is always music playing in our house. We have wires kind of tapped in or speakers tapped in, and there's always some type of music, and I'm always changing it. One morning it'll be jazz, then it'll be like classical, and then go straight to like outlaw country. And we had a bass tournament with friends and family. It was about a week ago, and I spent like 2 hours one night putting together a playlist for bass camp. And I didn't tell anyone I did this. And so as we're fishing, we do a one day of pre-fish, and then the tournament is on Saturday. And I play the playlist, and it's all really funny music that I kind of searched out. And my buddies are looking at me like, what are you playing? And I'm like, well, just listen to it. I'm not going to tell you. And man, we had such a good laugh about it. It was so worth the time I put in because it makes it so much more fun.
Yeah. Is there one song that we could look up on the funny?
No, it's all, I'm not going to say, but
okay.
It was,
gotcha.
It was some stuff that most, immature guys would find really funny. Yeah,
yeah. What about is there a band or a group or anything you give a shout out to?
You know, I'm pretty old school in my, I do like some newer pop stuff. But a lot of what I listen to on a regular basis is, you know, older, outlaw country and
like Willie Nelson,
older rock. Yeah. Those are probably my go-tos. I love, some of the lesser known outlaw country guys. And I like that time period.
Who's a lesser known? I'm just kind of curious. Cause I want to get it. I always think of when I think outlaw, I think of like Waylon, Willie.
Yeah.
Johnny.
Yeah. That's the group. Well, like even like Chris Christopherson is part of that, but I mean, I love some of his stuff. It's amazing. He was a great songwriter too. Guy Clark was like, just an amazing songwriter, and just, you know, you look him up on Austin City Limits and watch his old, like, singer-songwriter performances, and it's like, that dude is so cool. Like, it's, yeah. So Guy Clark is a good one to check out.
That's perfect. Yeah, I was trying to nail you down. We've got a little bit of a Spotify channel at wetflyswing.com/music where I'm trying to pick a guest track to throw on there so people can listen up, so...
And you can message me later and I'll tell you some of the tracks from the boat mix.
Okay.
All right, perfect. All right, Derek, hey, I'll let you get out of here. Thanks for going on that random track and for, you know, just sticking with me here. This has been fun getting to know what you do. And I know you're obviously, you're out there all over the place in the fishing world. So I think a lot of people already have seen your stuff. I know I've got a Buff here. I know that's another company you worked with. I've got a, I'm not even sure what species it is, right? That's another thing you did.
Yep. Yeah. We've worked with Buff for a lot of years. That's a great company.
All right, Derek, well, I'll keep in touch and check back with you when this thing gets ready to go. And yeah, appreciate you spending the time today.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me this morning. Appreciate it.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links and everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/244244. One last reminder, I just want to thank Derek again and Angler's Coffee for this reminder. And head over to right now, wetflyswing.com/anglers, or just over to Angler's Coffee, and check out their bags right now. You can get some amazing fly fishing art, some of Derek's fish faces. I think that's the name of the print, some different fish. So go find your favorite fish face and go get a bag of coffee. It's killer coffee. As you, if you've heard of this, you know I've been loving the Angler's Coffee. So that's all I have for you. That's a wrap. Thanks again for stopping by with us today. I'm definitely looking forward to staying in touch with you, and hope you can check in right now. Head over to social or send me an email. Drop me a line. Let me know you're out there listening, and I can keep going strong. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com. And if you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes.